on Processions and Family Norms by Michael Pakalik. But first, a note from Robert Royal. At The Catholic Thing, we are advocates for faith and reason, which is why we bring you careful and consequential arguments like the one Professor Pakalik makes today about kneeling for communion. It's regrettable that we even have to make such arguments in the church, but it's where we are and why we cannot let up in such work. But if you're reading this, I think you know that. And you also know that we need your help. There are only 3 days left for this fundraising campaign. The time to act is now. Please do. And now for today's column. But I never thought about the ontology of processions, or whether a norm could permit its own violation, until I looked at Blaise Cardinal Kupica's pastoral letter here, from last week, in which he appeared to forbid the faithful from kneeling to receive communion, on the grounds that this would disrupt the flow of the procession, and, contrary to the corporate spirit of Holy Communion, call attention to oneself. The day after reading the letter, I counted time during communion. To receive standing, I found, takes on average 3 seconds, and kneeling 5 seconds. Therefore, if 100 faithful received and half of them knelt, less than 2 minutes would be added, which hardly seems a disruption. A cavil, perhaps? For sheer process, I expect the old communion rail cannot be bested. But here's where the ontology of processions enters in. Can the end point of a procession be a candidate for a disruptor of that procession? People are walking forward to receive, and I stick out my leg to trip someone, then yes. Chairs are placed in the aisle, so that people must take a detour around. Also, yes. But suppose I receive standing, and I take the time necessary to ensure that the minister has seen that I am consuming the host, a neglected requirement of Redemptionis Sacramentum, in 92? Would doing so disrupt the procession? If so, then the bride and groom disrupt the wedding procession when they arrive at the front of the church and take their seats. And the priest and servers disrupt the procession when they bow and take their places around the altar. No, it seems impossible for the goal of a procession to count as a disruption of that procession. And then note the distinction in English between, on the one hand, processing, and on the other, walking in a procession. The former means simply moving forward with others rather than walking back, recessing. The latter means the deliberate formation of a group that conceives of itself as walking together. The latter is what Redemptionis Sacramentum means in the only passages in which it speaks of processions. For instance, it enjoins devout participation of the faithful in the Eucharistic procession on the solemnity of the body and blood of Christ. In 143, the latter, too, is what the priests and acolytes do at start of the Mass. The latter is what the laity also do when they bring up offerings during the Mass. But most definitely the former, in contrast, is what the laity do when they go up to receive communion. The priest then takes the paten or ciborium and approaches the communicants, who usually come up in procession, so says the general instruction on the Roman Missal. In 160, but this is just to say that typically they come forward. That is to say, they no longer follow the most ancient form of communion, mentioned in the Catechism, which is distribution. When he who presides is given thanks, and the people have responded, those whom we call deacons give to those present the Eucharist bread, wine, and water, and take them to those who are absent. In 1345, the cardinal conflates these two distinct things when he writes, "This is why we process into the church, process up to bring the gifts, process to receive Holy Communion, and process out at the end of Mass to carry the Lord into the world." No, the faithful process forward to receive communion, but do not do so in a procession. Then there are norms that, as it were, permit their own violation. These are puzzling. Exceptionless norms are plain, such as do not murder. Then there are norms that, if we break them, no one will care, say, at a crowded reception you park on some grass because no designated parking places are left. But then there are norms that establish a genuine default, and yet individuals may depart from the norm by right. The U.S. Bishop's norm for communion is like this. The norm established for the Diocese of the United States of America is that Holy Communion is to be received standing, unless an individual member of the faithful wishes to receive communion while kneeling. General Instruction, in 160, this unless is not a nuisance or inconvenience, but expresses a right possessed by each of the faithful. As Redemptionese Sacramentum emphasizes, any baptized Catholic who is not prevented by law must be admitted to Holy Communion. Therefore, it is not licit to deny Holy Communion to any of Christ's faithful solely on the grounds, for example, that the person wishes to receive the Eucharist kneeling or standing. In 91, I was puzzling over this kind norm with an exception until I realized this is how families do things all the time. The norm is to sit on the couch to watch the football game, but sit on the floor if you wish. The norm is to go on the family vacation, but the teenagers can stay home if they have activities. You're having guests over and serving mom's homemade pizza. The children setting the table are told not to worry about silverware because in this household we eat pizza by hand. But the guests arrive, and they prefer to use a fork and knife. Can you imagine the boorishness of refusing to give them utensils? Of saying, "Yes, use utensils if you wish, but we won't give you any." And can you imagine the boorishness of pastors who know this law about kneeling, but won't tell it to the faithful? Or who won't lift a finger to help those who want to kneel, maybe simply by providing a kneeler if asked? It's like the absurdity of thinking that the body of Christ shouldn't be like a family.